Our next presentation is odorant binding genes of the tarnished plant bug, excuse me, Liguus linearis. And Dr. O.P. Pereira, did I get that right?
Yeah.
All right. Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for staying this long. And while looking at that two-minute break at the slide, I think I'm trying to move Jeff Goh to Starkville. So he's in Stoneville. The talk is on Liguus linearis, and I think this is a summary of what we have been hearing past few years. And if you heard Mike Williams talk yesterday, it is 53% of the acreage infested and 0.602% at number one pest of cotton. In a way, it is good because it's only 0.6% damage. But if you look at the mid-south areas, it averages about 2.8% damage. Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, and Arkansas. So I'm not going to preach to the choir or whatever, because you all know about that. And I'm going to talk about the olfactory systems and what I'm looking at here. So the perception of chemical signals, when you smell something, basically the chemical molecules coming and bind into the olfactory system. And in vertebrates and us, we have a nasal mucosa with a lot of binding proteins, which binds mostly hydrophobic molecules and then transport to the neural sensors, where those receptors residing in those membranes are excited, and then neurons transmit a chemical a signal to the brain, so we identify the smell. In insects, it is a little bit different because we have these chemical messengers that can bind and directly activate the sensors, bypassing the soluble odorant binding proteins present in the exterior of the sensory fluid. So people looking at these olfactory binding proteins didn't know what to make of these things because the number and the diversity varies depending on the insects. And for example, mosquitoes, which require a lot of smelling, carbon dioxide and odorants to home to a host, sometimes miles away, has a lot more odorant binding proteins than a moth. In mosquitoes, they are found close to 100, and compared to silk moth, it is about 12. These are completely sequenced genomes. The soluble proteins located at the periphery of the sensory, that's what I'm going to talk about. These are what we call general odorant binding proteins. So they range from, the size ranges from 120 amino acid to 200. These are comparatively very small proteins. And they have they're divided into few classes, and they have I'll show you a picture of a crystal structure later on. They are divided into two classes based on what they resemble most. And PBPs, or pheromone binding proteins, looks like they have similar to the pheromone binding proteins, and the remainder we don't know about are called general odorant binding proteins because we have no idea what they're doing. Then there's another class, it's called chemosensory proteins, which is structurally a little bit different, but it's also present in this extra cellular fluid. They have a little bit different structure. Okay, so those are the three subclasses of odorant binding protein. And until recently, people didn't know what they are doing, and they were just classified as odorant binding protein. Nobody did anything. And in 2008, a group discovered that they can be acting as a mediator. So they found that a ligand, which is an odorant molecule, chemical binding to these binding proteins, and then that ligand binding changes the conformation of the odorant binding protein, and then this conformational change facilitates it binding to the receptor, and in that way, it activates a receptor. They demonstrated this using a Drosophila odorant binding protein and a sensory receptor. This is a crystal structure that was published last year using one of the Aedes aegypti odorant binding proteins, as you can see. Okay. And this is the area of the what you call binding pocket. And as you can see, they modeled something similar to an odorant binding molecule. And this is the binding pocket. And they claim that this is a pH-sensitive pocket with a pH-sensitive lid, basically binding hydrophobic molecules. And by sequencing the transcriptome of Lygus linearis, I have about 15, and some of them are partial sequence, so I'm not going to talk about it. When I submitted the abstract, it was only 9, but keep going up. The amino acid sequence obtained by conceptual translation, I haven't sequenced any of the proteins. These are translation of the transcript cDNA sequences. And they were also aligned to the other available sequences. And the sequence alignment, and you can see the CSP. APIS means it is a cytosiphon pisum, that's a PFID. And then you have this is the Aedes aegypti OBP1 that they use for modeling the crystal structure. And then I have some of them here, Nilpotent ligands, odorant binding proteins. And then if you can see, this whole clade contains odorant binding proteins. And then the one outside this red box is chemosensory proteins. So this, what we discovered in Lygus are general odorant binding proteins. And the one in the very top actually was published in 2004 or so. They call it LAP, or Lygus antennal protein. And when you take the structure of amino acid structure, and you can see a signature of the cysteines, which forms the binding pocket, which is usually a 6-cysteine pocket. And they form disulfide bridges between different cysteines and form that binding pocket. The C's in the red are labeled 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oops, I have a 1 C. I forgot to color. Anyway, those are the 6 cysteines, and I have marked them. And then there's one in this sequence, there's one additional one, which is a little bit of deviation. Excess means any other amino acid. So in this motif, it has a cysteine spaced by 15 to 39 different amino acids, another cysteine, and then 3 amino acids, and cysteine, and so on. And as you can see, this protein just follows exactly the same thing except for this deviation. And of course, in biological systems, you can find 100% conformity. And so what we did was we cut the antennae, proboscis, heads, thoraces, midguts, and legs, dissected out, and then we extracted RNA from those tissues and synthesized cDNA and used gene-specific primers for each one of these ones I'm going to show. And we use a ligase tubulin gene as a endogenous control. Then we performed real-time quantitative PCR because it is much more sensitive and quantitative than regular PCR. And we evaluated the expression levels in different tissues using delta-delta CT method, which is you use the expression level of a housekeeping gene, in this case a tubulin gene, as the standard, and you normalize by dividing all the other gene expression from the expression level of the tubulin gene. So you normalize it to that. Then you take a reference tissue and divide the expression level of that tissue, use the expression level of that tissue, divide everything else. So basically you take the differences between expression of the endogenous control and your reference tissue to gauge the expression levels in different tissues. So this is called the delta-delta CT method, which is CT stands for threshold cycle. Okay. So you take two different standardizations. So in this case, I use the antenna as the expression level standard and the tubulin gene. And this is a somewhat complicated graph, but what I want to point out is that when you equalize the expression in antenna to one, which is by dividing the expression level in antennae, dividing the rest of them by expression level in antennae, you see a lot of expression variation in these other tissues. And what I want to focus is what is in this proboscis, the expression level in proboscis. And this 755 gene actually is the ligase antennal protein, which the previous group published. I'm pretty sure they didn't look at the expression levels in the proboscis. As you can see, elsewhere, it is extremely low levels of expression. And this is a log scale graph. As you can see, it is less than 1,000-fold in the leg, gut, and about 100-fold less than the antenna in the head. And if you look at the proboscis, that dark red line, which is about 50-fold more in proboscis than antennae. So I was trying to figure out what is going on, and if you look at this is actually tissue expression normalized between male and females. And so this is antennae, male and female, and as you can see, gut, head, leg, and when you normalize when you pull the data from different biological groups, male and female, proboscis level goes down because there's a huge variation between male and female proboscis expression. So when you look at the target gene expression, these are the different tissues. As you can see, there are some genes that are very highly expressed in the proboscis compared to any other tissues, the other gut, head, and leg here. And so the question is, why they are expressed in proboscis and other body parts compared to antennae. If they are using it for pheromone binding or some other chemical aggregation or something else. And when you look at the expression level of some of these genes, and they are highly expressed in antennae, so they may be used in certain communication between insects. But I believe the ones that are highly expressed in proboscis are used in detecting the food sources. And we don't have any proof for this, and we are still working on it. And while talking to somebody, I forgot who it was, somebody studying the feeding behavior and oviposition told me that when they oviposit, they also go and probe the oviposition site. And I don't know if they are pre-drilling it so that they can insert the egg, or they are sensing using the chemical signature for that. So in summary, we have a lot more work to do, but I think these odorant binding proteins can be used to identify chemicals that bind to them and probably use that as attractants to in combination with insecticide to kill them. And maybe it is getting ahead of myself, but that's what I'm thinking.
Very good.
And thanks, Cotton Incorporated, for partially funding this work.
Thank you, Dr. Pereira.